It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Tuesday afternoon in the Summit City, live from the 1380 The Fan Studios in Fort Wayne. Derek Decker in for Brett Rump, along with producer Adam Lundy. And a pleasant good afternoon. We got a ton to talk about today. Tons of action last night. We are still talking college hoops on both the men's and the women's side as the Dons won a thriller at Tarleton State last night. They are moving on to the CIT Championship. IU and Notre Dame, the women, in the Sweet 16, and they are playing on the weekend. We're going to talk a little bit more about that with Dylan Sin. He was down at Assembly Hall last night covering the Hoosiers. Grace fell in the NAIA Final Four last night, and a disappointing end to what was a historic season for the Grace Lancers. Also, we're going to talk big rule changes with the NFL owners about the huge change to kickoffs and other rules that have changed. We're going to break down the Ohtani mess that continues and has kind of turned into a saga at this point. And Khalil Ware has declared for the NBA draft and is not heading back to Bloomington, it seems, for another season, which really doesn't surprise many folks, but it does solidify how Indiana has to move forward and try to attack the portal. I'm going to propose a couple of options coming up in the second hour on how Indiana can get better in the portal and who they might go after, because it has been hot today. Lots of guys with local ties and Indiana connections to the state, not necessarily a program, but ties to Indiana and the local area. A lot of those guys are in the portal, and we're going to talk about that in the second hour. So we've got Dylan Sin coming up after our first break, and later in the second hour, we're also going to talk with PFW women's basketball coach Maria Marcusano on her team's WNIT run, first two postseason wins in program history, and the last one, a very emphatic victory over Cincinnati, a Big 12 opponent, and the first win over the Big 12 conference in the history of the program. Adam, how are you?
Doing well, my man. Doing well. Kind of an icky gray day outside. But
it is. About to rain, too.
About to rain.
It's like one of those deals where I think it's going to get a little windy and all that. But yeah. There's no lightning, I don't think. So it's just kind of a weird March deal. But it's warm enough. Like, it definitely feels like we're continuing that trend toward baseball weather. 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Feel free to stop by, tell us how you're feeling, let us know where you're listening in from today. And hey, is your bracket busted like mine? 1380 The Fan's Second Chance Bracket is here with your shot to win $100 thanks to Winner's Circle in New Haven. Pick the final 16 teams in the tournament. If you're already signed up for Bracket Bash, just click on the 16-team tab and make your picks. If you're not signed up, text BASH to 46862, or you can sign up at 1380thefan.com. Our text line, 46862. You can follow us on Twitter. You can listen along in the app if you're outside of our listening area. But we've got a lot to talk about here today. And we're going to start with the Dons winning that thriller last night at Tarleton State. They ended up getting a layup from Eric Mulder late in the ball game. Dons hanging on, halftime deficit, and then ended up winning in the final minute of the ball game. We're going to talk with Brett Rump tomorrow and talk a little bit about this game against Tarleton State, and also preview the championship against Norfolk State, which you can hear right here on our air tomorrow night with the pregame at 6:45, tip-off at 7. Again, that is right here on 1380 The Fan. You can listen along for free as the Dons play for a CIT championship. Already winners of two games against Bowling Green and then last night against Tarleton State on the road. Rasheed Bello goes for 21, five Dons reaching double figures yesterday, and a really impressive win for PFW. And Adam, I think this is kind of the mark of a season, certainly, that had some really high moments early on, some disappointing moments throughout conference play, Didn't advance deep enough into the conference tournament to make much noise, although, you know, they could certainly say they got beat by a team that ended up winning a game in the NCAA tournament against a blue blood. At the same time, a chance to end the season on a positive note and get a championship here in the CIT.
Absolutely. It was a very interesting and very fun game, kind of back and forth, especially in the second half. The lead kept on changing, and it was tied, and then Purdue Fort Wayne went on just a really good, like, 9-0 run there close to the end that they were able to hold on to in the last minutes. And I'm excited to see what they can do against Norfolk State. It's been a grueling tournament so far for the Dons, just travel-wise and getting to where they need to be. But they've persevered, and they've made statement wins over Bowling Green and Tarleton State. Shout out to Eric Mulder, who's been kind of the key guy there late down the stretch in both games, making big baskets that have put the Dons up. And then they've had to get defensive stops on the other end both times in both games, but one against Bowling Green. They had multiple looks at the end of the game. And then Tarleton, they had looks there. They had the basket when the time was running out, and Purdue Fort Wayne was able to get the stop again.
Yeah, and credit to the Dons, too, for what's been a kind of a wacky tournament field. The bracket has not always been set in stone. Weird start times, different days. You're playing on the road both of these games, and now a third time. So credit to the Dons for being road warriors here throughout the CIT tournament this season and getting a chance for a championship. Well, before we go any further, we're going to talk a little bit about women's hoops. And again, Dylan Sins coming up after our first break. But right now it's time for today's top headlines with Adam Lundy.
All right, let's get into it, Derek. Well, you mentioned some of those transfer portal guys. Missouri Valley All-Conference 6'3" junior guard Connor Hickman of Bradley is planning to visit Indiana this weekend. Hickman, a high school standout at Bloomington South, entered the transfer portal yesterday. As a junior, Hickman shot 40.2% from three-point range on 2.4 makes per game. He averaged 14.5 points, 3 assists, 3.5 rebounds, and 1.2 steals per game, and shot 70.1% from the free throw line.
Very close friends with Anthony Leal. Just point that out.
Good to point out. Cameron Sutton was in the Detroit Lions workout facility last week when the team found out about the warrant for his arrest, team president Rod Wood said last night. Wood, speaking from the NFL's league meetings in Orlando, told Fox 2 in Detroit that a member of the team was able to talk to Sutton and advise him to turn himself in. The Lions released Sutton the next day. He's still not been found, and an arrest has still not been made. And NFL games on Christmas Day remain the gifts that keep on giving for the league, and that will continue in 2024 with two matchups, despite Christmas falling on a Wednesday, it was announced today. Matchups for the games, which will include teams that play on the previous Saturday to account for the recovery window, have yet to be determined. And that's a look at some of your top headlines today, Derek.
Thanks a lot, Adam. And yeah, that story there is kind of interesting with the NFL playing on a Wednesday. It's going to be a little bit weird, but it is what it is. And before, you know, when we were just seeing this news come out this afternoon, I had asked, like, how are they going to pull this off on a Wednesday? Like, how do you play games on Wednesday? But Saturday to Wednesday, I guess, makes sense. But that's really going to junk up some teams down the stretch of the season. I mean, you're talking about playing really important games. When it comes to Christmas time, you're the last couple weeks of the regular season. So some team is going to go Saturday, Wednesday, week and a half break, Sunday to decide potentially the playoff outcome for some of these teams. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, if they don't want to do it, then people should stop watching. But that's not going to happen. So NFL Executive Vice President of Media said today, when we saw the viewership from this past year, really our fans spoke. We certainly saw and believe that they are very much enjoying and wanting NFL football on Christmas.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's fine. That's all fine and dandy, but that wasn't on a Wednesday. Anyway, we'll leave that one alone for now. 46862 is a Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We got our first text in. Can I you get a new coach in the portal? If not, then none of the other stuff matters. That's kind of true. You know, I think, yeah, that's a nice comment. I appreciate it. I appreciate where it's coming from.
It won't be happening, unfortunately.
That will not be happening. I don't think they're broken beyond repair. I don't care what anybody says. I don't think Indiana is broken beyond a point where they cannot compete with the top five or six teams in the Big Ten. Big Ten championship, probably not. Going forward, too, looking at what the portal options might be, they'll probably be lucky, I think, to be sniffing the bubble again. I mean, I don't honestly see how they turn out much more than that. Even if Mbako comes back and, you know, you get all the pieces. We know Galloway and Leal are coming back. Maybe you pick up a couple of these pieces in the portal. I still think you're probably just trying to get yourself onto the bubble and just kind of squeak into the NCAA tournament. Those, to me, feel like pretty realistic expectations. Is that fair? Is that realistic for Indiana to expect? Maybe not. I think Indiana fans probably deserve a little better than that. But I think that's probably what Indiana's turning toward next season. Speaking of the Hoosiers, Indiana last night at Assembly Hall, the women's basketball team in the Sweet 16 for the third time in four seasons. Terry Morin has built a monster. Had the privilege of being down there not only last night but on Saturday as well. And got to see both the first and second round games. Last night, just over 12,000 fans on a Monday at 6:30 at Assembly Hall in an absolutely electric atmosphere. It's just amazing to see how far the fan base has come. Even when I started attending games as a student, as a freshman, so that would have been 2018, as a freshman at IU, they were pulling a good night 3,300 fans, maybe 3,500. And that was in the top few teams in the Big Ten. And now they consistently put over 10,000. They sold out a game this year. Caitlin Clark effect. They nearly sold out another. They sold out a game last year in the regular season. They have just climbed to a ridiculous number. Again, they averaged over 10,000 fans a game, second only in the Big Ten to Iowa, top five in the country in attendance for a team that was not as elite as last season. No question about it. But once again, in the Sweet 16. But again, a program that had you could – still count the number of NCAA tournament wins in the program's history on one hand before a few years ago. So Terry Morin has really come a long way. Mackenzie Holmes, a very deserving multi-year All-American, has led this team to the Sweet 16 again. Now they face an immense challenge in South Carolina, the number one overall seed in the tournament, and undefeated Gamecocks, who just took down North Carolina by more than 40 points in the second round. So certainly the test is tall for IU. 5 o'clock tip off on Friday. We're going to talk a little bit more about that game, break that down with Dylan Sin, because we got a lot to talk about there. Notre Dame, also, their women are in the Sweet 16 too, as they finally get back to a place where that program is more accustomed to. They fell on hard times for a couple of years and have had to kind of rebuild things a little bit, but they have done so nicely. A big win over Ole Miss yesterday and moving on to the Sweet 16. Also mentioned, Grace goes down on the men's side. You know, we've been talking on and off about Grace. At one point, they were undefeated through about 20 games on the season. They end up 34-2 on the year. But the Lions of Freed Hardeman of Tennessee beat them 86-81 last night. Came up just short, and the Lancers made a heck of a lot of threes. They shot it really well, 16 triples, but they turned it over 19 times, and that ended up being the difference last night as Grace goes down in the NAIA men's tournament. So no chance at a national championship. Again, pretty disappointing finish for a group that was ranked number one basically all season long and comes up just short of achieving their ultimate goals. We're also going to preview some of the NFL changes, and there have been a lot of them today. If you were listening along with Caleb and Kenny in the morning, there were a number of changes that were announced yesterday and kind of coming into today. Well, there's even been more added to that, and the biggest one is a huge change in the kickoff, and ESPN calls it the largest change to football in the last decade. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. We're going to break that down in the second hour. I've got a full segment planned for it, and we already touched on the fact that Khalil Ware is headed to the NBA draft, but how the dominoes are going to fall for Indiana after that. I do want to remind you, too, talked about at the top, bracket, if it's busted. Mine's terrible, by the way. Just to break this down for you. Okay, mine was fine for about a day and a half, and yeah, then it went through the crapper. Now, I took a big hit on Thursday, and I will publicly admit I had Kentucky in my national championship game, and that didn't work out so well. But I did not have a whole lot of luck with the bracket again. I am in the – granted, I'm on ESPN here – in the 20th percentile, so bottom 20% in the country. My women's bracket's even worse than that, and it's kind of hard to believe because it's pretty chalky. That's in the 13th percentile, so we're doing really bad.
Yeah.
And it's not good. I don't think I'll have salvation ahead of me here. I do have three of four Final Four teams. We'll say that. Still have three of my Final Four teams, so – it would take a hard pass. I've got Creighton in the Final Four. I've got UConn in the Final Four, obviously. And then coming on the bottom left of the bracket, I have Baylor making the Final Four, which, you know, that I guess I only have two left then. So there you go. down to two. We're not good. It's done. It's over. And I will say, I actually lasted a little longer than I do in most years. We have a bracket pool called the Decker Curse, because I am notoriously horrible in bracket picking, and I watch an immense amount of college basketball. I've always said, the more hours you put in, the worse you are at bracket picking. That's the way it goes. Although we have had, it's not been a chalky tournament, but this is what I was talking about last year. This is kind of a random tangent here, and feel free to chip in here, Adam. My thought on upsets in the NCAA tournament, like, everybody loves upsets. Like, Oakland beating Kentucky, that's a blast. That's a heck of a lot of fun. Everybody wanted to see it. Watching Jack Golkey do his thing and then make some noise in the second round. They almost made it to the Sweet 16. You know, they were a couple shots away there. They lose in overtime to a blistering hot NC State team. But those are the kind of the upsets you want. Last year, I felt like there were too many upsets because we ended up getting matchups later in the tournament that nobody cared about, right? Or example number one, even the national championship game. San Diego State wasn't a complete Cinderella, but they kind of were coming out of the Mountain West and all that, clearly overmatched against UConn. And it made for a very non-fun national championship game. I mean, UConn was in control pretty much from the tip. I mean, San Diego State kept it close for a little while, and then UConn just kind of ran away with it. But everybody wants to see good matchups, right? The folks that watch college basketball all year, you want to see, and even people that are casual fans, you want to see good teams play each other. You want to see one seeds play each other. It's a great thing. Like, who can seriously sit here and say they don't want to watch Purdue against Houston? I want to watch it. I'm very much looking forward to watching Purdue and Gonzaga and that rematch coming up on Friday night. Like, those are the matchups that you want to see. Names that get in there. Like, again, upsets are great. Watching a few of them go down, super fun. But in my opinion, the fewer upsets, to some degree, kind of the better, because you get the matchups that you want later in the tournament against the best teams. And that's ultimately what you're going for.
Yeah, I agree. You do want these, you know, marquee matchups. And some of these Cinderella teams do tend to run out of steam and just have a kind of sad game where they kind of bow out. And, you know, it's just a feel-good story then, as opposed to really quality matchups. But, you know, now this year, I'm really looking forward to our Sweet 16s. The lowest seed remaining is an 11th seed, North Carolina State, NC State. And then
yeah, and they've won, what, 7-8 in a row?
Yeah, so. And all one seeds are still alive. So yeah, it's exciting.
And actually, I should have done a little bit of research on this. All four one seeds making it through the first weekend. Although, Houston made it super interesting on Sunday night and really tried. That would have been one of the ultimate meltdowns if they had lost. Getting a text in, 46862, our Parkview Sports Medicine text line, saying, watched a ton of basketball, did really well last year because I picked upsets, but this year, not that many upsets, so I didn't do well. And I'm kind of in the same boat as that. You know, I had had GCU in the Sweet 16, which that almost happened. My bane is always being a Big Ten homer and picking them deep in the tournament. That never turns out well. I had Nebraska and Wisconsin both in the Elite Eight, and neither one of them won their first-round game. Texas A&M dropped 58 points in the first half against Nebraska, and Wisconsin flat-out did not play well against James Madison, who in turn got blown out by Duke. So everybody wanted to talk about the Cinderella Dukes. You know, this is a team that's hot. They had a great year. They were undefeated for a long time, had that win against Michigan State in the Sun Belt, and it was all fine and dandy. And then they ran into Duke, which just turned out to be a buzzsaw.
Yeah.
And we got a couple of big blowouts on Sunday. Between that Duke game and the Purdue game kind of back-to-back there were a couple of snoozers. And Illinois rolling over Duquesne to get into the Sweet 16. Good for them, by the way, to
right.
get to the second weekend. It's been a long time.
But only cream of the crop of the Big Ten kind of remaining now.
Yeah, and like I said, Illinois' path got significantly easier with Duquesne winning that first game. I think BYU would have been a pretty cool matchup to see. But again, kudos to Brad Underwood finally getting his due. I'm sure Purdue fans that are listening aren't as excited that Illinois is in the Sweet 16. I don't know. I was asking a Purdue buddy of mine. I watched the game with a Purdue friend on Sunday, and I don't get it. The hate between Purdue and Illinois fans, why there are constant Twitter spats on my timeline, I'll never understand. If you have some thoughts on that, or maybe a reason why Purdue and Illinois don't like each other and the fans are just completely at each other's throats all the time, please text in 46862. Got to take a break. When we come back, we're chatting with Dylan Sin of the Journal Cassette. He'll talk about Indiana's big win last night to advance to the Sweet 16 at Assembly Hall. You're listening to The Sports Rush. I'm Derek Decker, in for Brett Rump, with Adam Lundy on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Kind of soggy out there today. If you're driving home, please be careful. But glad you're listening along with us. We're on 4 to 6. I'm Derek Decker in for Brett Rump today with Adam Lundy. And last night, Indiana victorious in the round of 32 against Oklahoma down at Assembly Hall. The women's team to the Sweet 16 for the third time in four seasons. Joined now by Dylan Sin of the Journal Gazette, who was down in Bloomington last night. And Dylan, my friend, you said you made a tweet this morning that claimed that that was perhaps the top moment that you've seen as a reporter at Assembly Hall last night. And it certainly was a really cool moment and what was a very rowdy and energetic atmosphere from start to finish.
Yeah, no, it was just a lot of fun.
And it obviously meant so much to especially Mackenzie Holmes, especially Sarah Scalia, as it was their last game at Assembly Hall, and they were able to go out with an NCAA tournament win after not being able to help Grace Berger do that last year. That was something they said after the game, was that win belongs in part to Grace Berger as well, because they wouldn't have been there without her. So I thought that was really interesting that they said that and kind of made sure that she got a little bit of the credit too, because they said all year they felt bad that they weren't able to do that for her last year. So, no, just a terrific scene. A great basketball game, by the way. There were 9 lead changes in the fourth quarter, 21 lead changes in the game, back and forth the whole way, and just really, really gutsy performances all around.
Yeah, and in more on the environment, over 12,000 last night at Assembly Hall. It was not completely capacity, but it sounded like it. I was in there for a number of big games this year, both on the men's side and the women's side. That was without question, once again, the best atmosphere of the season at Assembly Hall, as it should be. It's postseason basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I love having the first two tournament games at home site. You get atmospheres like that. The fans are tuned up. You get Mackenzie Holmes running up the stairs to celebrate with the student section after the game. I mean, it was a blast. Yeah, you said there were a couple of seats in kind of the rafters up above in the upper deck that weren't entirely filled, but you would never have known it from the way the crowd was reacting, that crowd, especially in the fourth quarter when basically every possession, the lead changed. It was loud the entire time. Oklahoma said that they were affected by it, and they turned the ball over more than they would have otherwise. They went 4 of 25. From three-point range, like that matters. Like, the crowd affected that game in a positive way for Indiana.
Yeah, for sure. And it certainly was a game where you could feel that Oklahoma not playing in that kind of an atmosphere very often with the coach and everything. Of course, their head coach played at Iowa and played at Assembly Hall years and years ago. But that's when 500 people were coming to games. We were talking about the growth of the fan base a little bit earlier on. But I also want to point out, Dylan, the way that Indiana won this game. You know, they shoot it at such a high and efficient percentage all season long. And then last night they proceeded to miss 18 layups and shoot 19% from three. And somehow they still eke out a win against a very solid Oklahoma team, mainly because of Mackenzie Holmes in the second half.
Yeah, no, that's what it was. Is they realized the shots weren't falling. Oklahoma was doing a good job of kind of denying Sarah Scalia the ball. She had 27 in the first game against Fairfield. They said, we're not going to let her beat us. And so Indiana went into Mackenzie Holmes over and over and over again on the block. They just found different ways to get her the ball. And they said down the stretch when they scored 10 points in a row and 6 of those were from Holmes, they ran the same play for her, I think 4 possessions in a row is what Sydney Parrish said, basically just a simple screen to get her into post position and then just a post feed back out and another post feed. And it worked every single time. Like, they couldn't stop it because they were so intent on making sure that Indiana wasn't getting a ton of open threes that they didn't really double the post very much. And so Mackenzie Holmes is not going to be stopped one-on-one very often, and she wasn't in the fourth quarter.
All right, Dylan, they've obviously got an immense task ahead of them. You got South Carolina coming up on Friday. This is the one, right? Kurt Cignetti actually referenced it this morning in a presser talking about how, hey, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. That's certainly the challenge for Indiana. South Carolina is without question the best team in the country. They are undefeated. How does Indiana kind of get this done? I will say, just looking at the matchups here of all the teams that are left, it's not unrealistic to say that Indiana matches up okay with South Carolina because they've got a quality big and lots of three-point shooters. That being said, you're still talking about a team that has not lost in a calendar year.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is, right? Is that South Carolina is the best team in the country. Even having a perfect game plan is not going to make it easy. right? And so you are going to have to play your best game of the season. And that's the problem, is that IU has played some really, really high-level teams this year and hasn't done particularly well against those teams. They beat Iowa at home, but they lost big to Stanford. They lost to Ohio State. They lost big to Iowa the first time they played them. There's going to need to be, hey, we can beat this team. They can't go into the game. I think a lot of teams do this against South Carolina. They go into the game already beaten because South Carolina is just so good. There's no way we can win the game. And I think Indiana has to make sure that that mindset just doesn't creep in at all this week. Don't be satisfied with getting to the Sweet 16 and winning your last game at Assembly Hall. Go do something special, and this team has a chance to do that this week.
Well, more on something special, talking about Assembly Hall. Indiana goes 17-0, a perfect 17-0 at the Hall this season. And you brought up the fact that you love the atmospheres in the first and second rounds. There's a lot of buzz going on right now, and we're going to see how the attendance and things go with the regionals, the Sweet 16, and Elite Eights in Albany and Spokane, opposite sides of the country, but only two sites instead of four this year. So how is that going to affect things? The question that a lot of fans are raising, especially Oklahoma fans that were a little hurt after last night, saying, hey, why don't we play this at neutral sites now? Because you've got the game that has grown to a point that you feel like you're still going to have people show up if you play it at a neutral site, but then you're going to miss out on the atmosphere. How do you see that, and do you feel like that's a direction the NCAA should at least look into, if not go to, in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably look into it just because that's how they do it for the men's tournament. They'd probably like to have a uniform if they could, but I just don't see why you would do that. I think one of the great things about the women's tournament is that you do play home sites. I think it gives the top four, it gives you an incentive to drive toward the finish as a top four seed, make sure you get to host. It was a big deal that IU got a top four seed and didn't slip down to a five. That was huge for them, and they had to win that game against Iowa in the last couple of weeks of the regular season to do it. So that made that game even more important than just for the Big Ten standings, you know? So I think that it adds an incentive, it adds meaning to the regular season, and it just rewards the teams that have been the best during the season, and it gives them a chance to have a couple more home games where you can have kind of coronation events like you did last night, where the seniors for the teams that are hosting get to go out with a great win and kind of cement their place in their program's history. I don't think that should change. I've actually said for a couple of years now that the NCAA should probably look at doing that for the men, too. I don't think they ever will, but that would be really exciting for the men to do it, too. And I think that there's a lot of reasons that they should.
Yeah, I'm completely on board with you. I think keeping things on campus sites, because that's how it works in all of the other smaller sports as well. I mean, you think like baseball and softball, those are four-team regionals at some places, home site, and I think it just adds to the value of college athletics in the postseason. Dylan, talking more about Indiana's emerging women's basketball fan base, and I had referenced before our first break, you know, even when I started going to games as a student, as a freshman in 2018, they're lucky to get 3,000, 3,500 in there on any given night, even in Big Ten games, close to 4,000 maybe. And that was pretty good at the time for women's basketball. That's only 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. And it has just completely changed. You know, you mentioned Caitlin Clark and teams getting to go out on their home floor. Caitlin Clark got to do that last night with one final ode to those fans at Carver Hawkeye that sold out every game this season. But the fan base has just exploded in a entirely new levels. I think it's at least in small part due to that NIT championship back in 2018. It kind of started all the buzz around the program, and then they've slowly grown from there.
Yeah, I think what has to happen is when you're building a program like Terry Morin has done at IU, you need to win. It's almost a chicken and egg situation. You need to win to get interest, but in order to win, you need to have interest, right, to recruit. And so what needs to happen is somewhere along the way, you need to win some games you weren't supposed to win, right? And I think that Indiana did that a little bit in that WNIT in 2018. They weren't the favorite in that tournament by any means, but they won those games, and they did it at home. And I think that got fans excited a little bit. And then the next season, there was some buzz around the program, and you started to get some higher-level recruits that said, hey, I want to come here. This seems like something's building. And that's how Terry Morin was able to convince people like Mackenzie Holmes, like Grace Berger, to show up and become part of the program and take a chance on a program that hadn't had much history to that point. And now you've seen what it is. And so that's what has to happen is when you're building a program, you got to win some games you weren't supposed to win. And Indiana did that back in 2018.
All right, Dylan, real quick, your thoughts on the women's tournament on the way out in terms of who's making it to the championship game. I mean, is there anybody that can take down South Carolina? And also, what are Iowa's chances? A lot of folks are thinking about that. And maybe LSU in the mix, too. You know, people are eyeing that LSU-South Carolina rematch. It could be a heck of a lot of fun. But who do you see making it through, and what's your prediction for a championship?
Yeah, so that's the thing is I love Notre Dame. I think they're a great team. I think they're playing terrifically well right now. The problem is that they play South Carolina in the Elite Eight unless IU pulls a massive upset. And they played South Carolina early in the year and got run off the court. It was really the only time that this happened this year, one of the few times. And so you wonder, is that something where they are going to be able to be in that game? And I'm just not sure of the answer, although I do think right now Notre Dame is probably one of the 5 to 6 best teams in the entire country. I do think South Carolina probably wins the title just because it seems foolish to pick against them. I don't know if Iowa or LSU really has what it takes to get past them. I think Iowa was actually better last year than they are this year, just overall. But we'll see. Obviously, when you have a player as good as Caitlin Clark and some capable pieces around her, there's a chance they just hit 18 threes in a game and they pull an upset. But I think it's foolish to pick against South Carolina at this point.
Well, I totally agree, and I also agree on your point with Iowa being better last year. You know, they had that a much better inside presence. They rely on guard play now, and, of course, Caitlin Clark. But Dylan Sin of the Journal-Gazette, thanks, as always, for the time. It was great seeing you last night, but too bad our conversation was a little short. I got moved on by an usher, but glad we got to talk more about the game today. Thanks a lot for joining the show.
Absolutely, Derek. Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
You bet. All right, that's Dylan Sin of the Journal-Gazette. You can catch his coverage all year long in the Journal-Gazette. And, hey, there's lots of stuff coming up. He's writing a new newsletter that's going to go out every week during Tin Cap season as he gets ready to cover the Tin Caps once again. And certainly appreciated his coverage around the ballpark last year. Great to have in the press box and somebody to chat with between innings. Along with you, Adam, it's me, Mike, you, and Dylan sitting in the booth, more or less connected either by headphones or in person one way or another. So certainly made for a fun atmosphere.
A lot of fun times up in the Tin Caps press box.
Absolutely. And looking forward to more fun times this season. And hey, their season's right around the corner. And MLB opening day is less than 2 days away. We're going to talk about what's going on with some Major League Baseball news. Shohei Ohtani is in a world of mess right now, and there's a lot of questions to be answered. We're going to try to break down the timeline, how everything has happened. If you've been living under a rock or you don't care about baseball, here's why you should care. We're going to talk about all of that and much more, and also a comment from a former gambler in Pete Rose when we come back. You're listening to The Sports Rush. I'm Derek Decker, in for Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Tuesday afternoon here on The Sports Rush, getting some rain at the station, although I think it's about done. Looks like the sun's about to come out again. It was kind of windy on our way in today. I like blew over some stuff in my yard this morning, and kind of a weird day, but
oh, yeah.
It's not cold, and that's good. Hey, we were talking earlier. I had asked, 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line, why Purdue fans and Illinois fans don't get along. We have one texter that certainly feels very strongly, clearly, seems to be from the Purdue side of things. I wish we had more Illinois fans in our audience so we could get a little more of a balanced perspective. Like, I think these are all valid. Like, some of these are valid, like, things to say about Illinois fans. But at the same time, it's certainly looking through a lens of a little bit of bias. I will just say from an Indiana perspective, it does seem like Illinois doesn't have a strong rival in the conference, and so they kind of have to poke out and try to seek out those things, and that's why they're in like Purdue mentions all the time, because they need somebody to hate, and they need somebody to hate them, and nobody really hates them. I don't know, like it's not a thing. Illinois is not a team that I think about. I mean, I think for a lot of folks that aren't familiar with Indiana's background, you know, there's a strong case to be made from Indiana's side. Like, clearly Purdue's biggest rival is Indiana. But from Indiana's side, it is Purdue. It is also, unfortunately, because of circumstances, a waning rivalry, which at times has been a bigger rivalry for Indiana, is Kentucky. That's coming back soon. John Calipari, actually, rumoring today he's going back to Lexington on his way back. There has been some smoke moving in the rumor mill that he may not be back next season after the collapse against Oakland last weekend. I think that's pretty unlikely. It looks to me like he's going to be back again, at least for one more year. But things have not been good. You know, Indiana actually has more NCAA tournament wins since 2019 than Kentucky, and that's not good, because Indiana's wins, one of them was a first four game, mind you, and then the other one was last year against against Kent State. So it's not like there's a real impressive wins. Kent State and Wyoming, and yet that's still more wins than Kentucky has in the last 5 years in the tournament. Is it time for Coach Cal to go? I don't know. I don't know that we have a ton of Kentucky fans listening. I'm sure there are some out there. But if you've got thoughts on that, 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Shifting from college basketball into Major League Baseball. That is certainly going to grab some storylines this week. It is opening week, and Thursday, teams getting rolling. Of course, the Dodgers and the Padres have already got a couple games under their belt. But for most teams in the major leagues, it is opening day on Thursday. And Shohei Ohtani, if you have not been following the situation the last couple of days, it has evolved into quite a saga. He said yesterday in a press conference that he never bet on sports. He was shocked that his interpreters stole money from him, $4.5 million to be exact, to apparently pay off an illegal gambling debt that he had had. Then some folks are rumoring, of course, you know, the thoughts out there. Well, did he just take the fall for Ohtani? You know, what the heck is going on here? And the problem is, in his press conference, he didn't make a whole lot of things clear. He tried to distance and separate himself from the situation as much as possible. And I totally get it. I totally respect it. You know, he's sitting up there with a new translator, but Ipe, his former translator and friend. I think it's important to note here, this guy is not just some random dude that happened to have access to his bank account. He was very close with Ohtani. These guys hung out together. They were friends off the field. Yes, he was an interpreter, and it was his job, his career, but he was clearly more than just a worker, just an assistant. Like, he was very close with Ohtani. So it's not unlikely that he would have access or at least know-how of Ohtani's financial situation if this is true, which I think there's a large chance that what we're getting now is not the full story. I don't know if we're ever going to get the full story. Major League Baseball cannot afford to lose a guy like this, okay? I think MLB made some huge strides last season in terms of the product, on-field, fan engagement, speeding up games. You've got a few rising stars. Ohtani is a once-in-a-generation player, one of the great, or at least on track to be one of the greatest players in the history of the sport, and certainly one of the most versatile players that we haven't seen in ages and ages, almost 100 years in this sport. And so that being said, there's just, as an organization, as a rule of thumb, you would want to keep that guy around, right? So Major League Baseball certainly has some motivation to try and cover up if there's something going on. I'm not implying that Ohtani's in the wrong here. I'm not implying that. I'm just simply stating, if he is in the wrong, Major League Baseball has a lot of motive to make sure that this does not end up affecting Ohtani in some major way. A fine, a citation, that's great, whatever that is. But I think we have such a low chance of seeing, like, significant suspension. It's going to be more a slap on the wrist if we do find anything out. This is not the only time that we have seen this problem emerge during the era of sports betting here across professional sports in the last decade or so. Of course, we've had things happen with the Colts last year. Just in the last few months, all the news came out about multiple Colts being involved in betting scandals, betting on football, betting on other sports. Shohei Ohtani claims that he's never bet on anything. Here's what I'll say. I think we have a fundamental problem here in the story that was made from Ohtani yesterday. Let me quickly read you the quote, just a segment of what he said during this presser. Quote, "I never bet on baseball, any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do on my behalf. And I've never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports. Up until a couple days ago, I didn't know this was happening. Just to kind of go over the result. In conclusion, Ipe's been stealing money from my account and has told lies. Ipe told to the media and to my representatives that I, on behalf of a friend, paid off debt. Upon further questioning, it was revealed that it was actually, in fact, Ipe who was in debt and told my representatives that I was paying off those debts. All of this has been a complete lie. Obviously, I never agree to pay off the debt or, you know, make payments to the bookmaker." Okay, so this account is just, again, Ohtani's trying to divorce himself from the entire situation and just say, like, I knew nothing, and I don't know why this happened. I didn't know it happened until the media found out it happened. Yeah, that's not likely. It's not likely. I'm not saying he did anything wrong, but it's not likely. So apparently, you know, Otani's version here is basically saying that, you know, dozens of checks, layers of checks and balances are ignored here. Nobody had the wherewithal to catch massive wire fraud, massive fraud, $4.5 million, and just happened to slip under the radar. And then this long-term friend, a guy, again, not just his assistant, his close friend, had the idea in his mind that he's going to rip off $4.5 million from him. Like, I'm not close enough friends with anybody who's got that amount of money. I'm not. Like, I'm just not. And I'm certainly not a translator for anybody. I know one language, and I don't even know that one that well. But there's a lot left to be desired from this press conference to me. Why did he have access to the accounts? That's question number one. Now, I said it's plausible, and that may even be giving him a little bit too much of the benefit of the doubt here. But I think it's plausible for a guy that's close and also involved with some of the dealings with Otani, certainly involved and in the room with all of the business and contract dealings that he's been dealing with over the past couple of seasons, you know, the things that he's been offered. He's in the conversation. He's in the room all the time. He's the guy that's working through all this stuff and translating back and forth. So that being said, he was never listed as a financial advisor of any kind. Not helping him out with cash payments. I don't know why he would be involved in that. I'm just saying why he would have control over that money does seem a little bit weird. Okay? Why did nobody else manage the money? That's the next question. Otani's represented by CAA, that agency. There are endless amounts of money managers, financial advisors, bankers. His representation is really good. And so all those people are available to Otani if he needs them. There are plenty of people in his sphere, clearly, and in any baseball player's sphere, that can handle money. They're experienced at managing money and finances. So why did he refuse to use them? And this guy is one of the highest paid players ever in any sport and has a long-term deal to be the face of not only the franchise of the Dodgers, but also the sport of baseball, and continues to be. And this is during an era, by the way, when Mike Trout is still playing, I might add, who has, again, some of the best statistical efficiencies of any player ever, despite his struggles in terms of staying healthy and also his team sucking for most of his career so far. Here's my next question. This is probably the biggest evidence in my mind that something else is going on. Don't know what it is. How did he not know his money was stolen? Like, how do you just glance over? I get it. There's a ton of money rolling in. But how did he not know $4.5 million was missing? And then somebody brings it up and then just, I didn't know it was missing. And man, I just got taken advantage of and somebody stole it from me and it was my translator. He's not like, I also want to point out, yes, there's a lot of money, but he's not in a stratosphere where he's got like $2 billion sitting in his bank account yet. Okay. He's been paid approximately $42 million from Major League Baseball up to this point in his career. That's a lot. That's a lot more than most people listening to this show can fathom. At the same time, that's not, you know, just exorbitant amount of wealth to the point where you're not going to you're just going to glance over like 10% of your net worth. Like, come on. How do you not notice when you have $4.5 million missing from your account? But also the backloaded nature of his contract, of course, a lot of those incentives and stuff are just forced in the back of that contract with the Dodgers. That means that he's not getting that steady stream at a high rate that that other players might be that are getting paid on a regular salary on a long-term basis. He's got to be a little different in terms of managing his money, and one would think there would be multiple people involved in how he manages his assets. Next question. Why did Shohei's representatives, when they released their first statement to ESPN, they took the translator's word. Okay, that they just said it would have been, with him being a friend and all that, like an illegal bookmaker making payments. He said, well, the difference between paying off a friend's debt and he stole $4.5 million from him, that's a huge difference. him giving money to somebody to pay off a debt is completely different than he ripped me off. And that's what we're trying to figure us that's what we're trying to figure out. Now, I think the story ultimately falls somewhere in between. The extremes don't seem to make sense. It's a very good thing to think, in my opinion, productive thing, to think about this entire situation as being on a spectrum. You've got one side, one extreme side that says Shohei, basically innocent of everything, really did get robbed. And the other is Ohtani is the actual gambler completely, and his translator was the fall guy. That was thing number one that a lot of folks were talking about right immediately in the aftermath. Well, now Ohtani's saying, well, I didn't know anything about anything, and I got totally ripped off. Now, there are big holes in both of those statements, okay? So the reality is it's probably somewhere in the middle. Where does this leave us? I don't know, but we're 2 days away from opening day. And again, this is not a problem that is just confined to Major League Baseball. Just the latest thing has happened to be involved with the most important player right now in the sport. But I still think we are so unlikely to see a suspension with Ohtani at this point. There's no reason to expect a suspension anytime in the near future. Now, we may learn facts in the upcoming days, but more than likely it's going to take weeks, months to figure this out ultimately, and he's going to be playing during that time. I do think it's funny. We were talking about that Pete Rose quote. Here's what he said. He weighed in on the incident. Also, some random video, Pete Rose sitting watching March Madness in a restaurant, and he said, I wish I had an interpreter. I'd be scot-free if I had one. We're going to talk about much more on the other side of this break. Ohtani's a mess. You know what else is a mess? NFL rule changes. Coming up in the second hour on the Sports Rush, I'm Derek Decker in for Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.